following is a presentation of Inspire Church of Skagit Valley.
Well, Connor, my name is Matt Barnett. I used to be one of the pastors on staff at City Point Church in Mount Vernon, and LaConnor and Marble Mount, and now just recently Othello, Washington. And so Pastor Bill asked me to kick off the series with you, and I'm excited to be here this morning. Let's pray. Jesus, we thank you that you are our God, you are our King. And we thank you that no matter what life throws our way, we can trust you. We can wholeheartedly set yourself as the anchor of our souls. So this morning, we ask that you open our eyes, open our hearts to what you're going to speak through the message this morning, through your word. So we ask that in your name. Amen. Well, like I said, I'm Matt Barnett. I've been a pastor for 11 years. Just recently stepped down from being a full-time staff member of City Point Church, running my own business. So in the bit of an interesting transition, I'll tell you a little bit more about that as we go throughout the morning. But Pastor Bill, when he asked me to speak today, I knew immediately why. He knows my story. He knows what's happened and transpired over the last 5 years. I've known Pastor Brian and Jalita for the last 6 years, and their family. Just recently got a chance to meet Ty in the last couple years, and grown to know them, love them, and so honored that Pastor Bill would ask me to speak. I'd like to think of this morning as not a typical sermon, so don't expect a sermon this morning. I've preached several over the last 11 years, but this isn't going to be a sermon. This is going to be me opening up my life and saying, here's the journey that God's brought me in the last 5 years. And so my prayer is that this can help set the tone for the series that we're about to begin called Shipwreck, a relationship series. I would say that life is a series of shipwrecks. I would say that there's several reasons. There's a myriad of reasons why there are shipwrecks in our life. But I think at the top of that list is this struggle that's gone on from the beginning of time. And that struggle is this. God has set some very clear boundaries and some very clear guidelines for our life. At the very top of that list is the statement that he says, you shall have no other gods before me. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your spirit. This is primary. So I'm going to give you the big idea right up front in the sermon. If you want to take notes, this is like the big idea to take away. And that's this. When it comes to relationships, God must be number one. When it comes to relationships, God must be number one. When we begin to place other things ahead of God, and when I say that, I'm talking about when we find our sense of identity, our sense of value, our sense of worth, and things that are other than Jesus Christ, our life goes down the path of a shipwreck. Remember when I was 18 years of age? Grew up in Arlington, Washington, so really close, local boy, pastor's kid. And I remember working two jobs in the summer and just playing summer baseball and working two jobs and busy and just running 100 miles an hour and just paid cash for a $7,000 vehicle that I absolutely adored. And like any good 18-year-old, the first thing you do when you get a vehicle is you wash it. Then you wax it, then you wash it again, then you vacuum it out, then you like comb through for any specks of dirt, and then you take it to get a stereo put in, of course. Rick Morris knows that very well. Rick and I have a background in stereos. Yeah. Yes, you would. So I drive down to South Everett, go to Car Toys, get the brand new stereo, just loved the stereo, loved the sound system, get it installed, driving down Airport Road, 45 miles an hour, South Everett, and hit road days. Now, road days, if you don't know what that is, most of you do, that means you don't remember the last mile, what happened. Like, you're like, okay, you're here, and then you're there, and then you don't really remember what happened in between. You know there's a few stoplights, lane changes, but you're like, I don't remember any of that. That happened to me Except this one wasn't an innocent road days. This one was, I thought that was a green light, and the last memory I have is the light was red, and I was entering the intersection, 45 miles an hour, saw a GMC Jimmy coming from the left, and I hit it, head right over the back right wheel well. Flipped that vehicle, it landed on its hood and skidded to a stop. My vehicle was an accordion. Thankfully, I had my seatbelt on. She, however, the other driver, did not. I stumble out of the car and try to get to the side of the road. I'm looking at the whole thing like it's a bad dream. Thankfully, she's able to somehow crawl out through the broken glass, the hole in the window, and get out herself, and she was okay, praise God. But I remember sitting on the side of the road looking at the wreckage, having police officers and firemen come up to me and say, you shouldn't be alive. Like, there's no, looking at what this just happened and the witnesses and the testimonies, you shouldn't be alive right now. And I remember just thinking to myself, why is this happening, God? Why did you allow this? Well, it wasn't but an hour later when I figured out why. You see, I told you that I kind of liked that car. You know, I probably, in the week that I owned it, spent about 20 hours taking care of it. Like, I vacuumed it at least 6 times. I'm not exaggerating. I washed it at least 3. I know I waxed it and buffed it. I know I Rain-X'd every single window. Because we live in Washington, so we want it to feel like Star Wars at night, right? You know, the water beating off. I loved that car. What had happened unknowingly, unbeknownst to me, is that car had begun to supplant God in my life. It had become a small little idol. And God, in his loving way, said, you know, it's a gift, Matt, but if it takes my place, I'm going to lovingly remove it from you. And I remember vividly in the police car and the conversation I had with the Christian officer that God began to reveal that to me. I'll come back to that later. When it comes to relationships, God must be number one. Before I begin and go through a little bit of my journey over the last 5 years, let me just dive into 2 key scriptures. I've referenced them. Let's go through them right now. Exodus chapter 20, verses 2 and 3. It says this, I am the Lord your God who rescued you from the land of Egypt, the place of your slavery. You must not have any other God but me. Exodus 34:14. You must worship no other gods, for the Lord, whose very name is Jealous, is a God who is jealous about his relationship with you. Key principles for us to live our lives by. And I believe that one of the key reasons why we have shipwrecks throughout our life is we get this principle flip-flopped and we don't get it. When it comes to relationships, God must be number one in your life. So let's ask a couple obvious questions. What are these other gods? What does that mean? Because I don't know about you, but I don't think I have any hand-carved images on my mantle at home, like any wooden statues or things of that nature, and we're not in India, so most likely most of us don't have those things either. So what does it mean when it says no other gods before me or things that you've created? Well, we haven't created in our day and age, generally, wooden idols. But we've created a whole lot of other things with our own hands, haven't we? We have positions in the community or in our job, professions, that have begun to give us a sense of value. And we value that immensely. And if we're honest, we may be valuing that above our relationship with Jesus. Maybe it's your marriage. Maybe you've placed your marriage at this level and Jesus is here, and so you're gaining your sense of value by how good of a husband you are, how good of a wife you are. Maybe wives or moms, maybe you've placed your entire value in your children, and so how good of a mother are you, and how good your children are being raised, and how great they're doing in school, and how they're doing in life. You gain such a sense of value of that, from that you have to ask yourself the question, is that beginning to supplant my value? Am I beginning to place that above my relationship with God? Here's a good test to ask yourself this question This would be a good test, whether it's a position, whether it's a possession, or whether it's a relationship in your life, whether you're dating or you're married. Ask yourself this question. If that relationship, possession, or position were not in your life, like if it was gone in an instant, would you be okay? Now, it should shake you, right? I mean, that asking that should really rock you. But if it takes you to a place where you don't know how you would recover from that, that's a good indication that that might be a little bit higher than it should be in your life. When it comes to relationships, and all of life, really, but when it comes to relationships, God must be number one. God must be number one. But here's the real question. We gotta ask this question. Why is it that God makes this statement that he's a jealous God and he's jealous for his relationship with us? If you're a new Christian or if you're a pre-Christian, like you're coming here checking this whole thing out and you're asking yourself, jealous? Like, I thought jealousy was a sin, so how is it that God can be jealous? Good question. And we'll address that. But this should be the obvious question. Why is it that God repeatedly throughout the Bible, throughout human history, has begun to steer mankind back to him after we drift? We drift to things and to people and relationships, and God steers us back. If you look through the entire Old Testament, you can walk through the whole journey of the Israelites and how they gave themselves to other gods. They gave themselves to their success. Solomon gave himself to his own pursuit of wisdom and power and relationship after relationship with women. And his mind and heart drifted from God. This is the story of humankind. And I believe that every single one ends in a shipwreck if we don't have God as first and primary. So I'm going to let that question sit. Why is it? Why is this such a big deal that God is so jealous for his relationship with us? I'm going to let that question sit, and we're going to go through a bit of my journey, a bit of my story. I'm going to begin to go through four components of, over the last 5 years, how God has either allowed or lovingly removed certain relationships from my world. He's either allowed them to go away or he's actually lovingly removed them in order to bring me back to a place where God's central. So, as a pastor, my first role that I want to discuss. Been a pastor for 11 years. In the last 5 years, been a pastor at City Point Church, had multiple roles. Kids pastor, that's how I know Brian really well, was a kids pastor for several years. Led an early education center and was oversaw that, then became family life pastor, and then after that became campus pastor, and then sort of as executive pastor role, and then just now recently stepped down. In that journey, 5 years ago, I remember very vividly one Sunday morning getting up front, just kind of like what Ty was doing, and giving the announcements and the broadcast and walking through things. Generally, I'm okay in front of a crowd and okay speaking, but for whatever reason, that morning, I was having a hard time. Now, most people wouldn't notice what was happening or if I was screwing up or something, but I felt it. In fact, I felt it so intensely that I felt like there was this magnifying glass on me. And so I began to apologize. Like I would make a statement, and then I'd say, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And then I'd make another statement and say, I'm sorry. And so imagine, Ty did an incredible job, but imagine what Ty did except like 5 or 6 or 7 apologies speckled throughout. Nervous energy, which is totally not usually like me. And so my lead pastor, Mike Acker, pulled me aside that later that week and said, what happened, Matt? And I honestly could not tell you why. I couldn't tell you what was going on. Well, after reflecting on that time and several other major things happening, I knew exactly why. As a pastor, I was massively insecure. I cared so deeply about what people thought of me. I had to let go an employee in the early education center that I oversaw, and that was a very visceral experience. I had to let the person go. Backlash turned into a 45-minute swearing fest where I was cussed at. And I began to just crumble. I went into my lead pastor's office and bawled like a baby on his shoulder. And he looked at me in the eye later that week, and he said, Matt, you care way too much about what people think of you. It was true. I was so massively insecure. And over the last 5 years, God has lovingly removed that so much to the point where I just stepped down from being a pastor, and I'm okay with it. Like, my identity is no longer Pastor Matt. In fact, I think it's kind of funny when people say, hi, Pastor Matt, in the community. It's like, oh, yeah, that's what I do. And, you know, don't get me wrong, being a pastor is a calling. It's not a paycheck. So just because I'm not on staff at a church doesn't mean I'm no longer a pastor. But guess what? That's not my identity anymore. God's lovingly removed that. In this journey 3 years ago, one of the most deeply painful things in my life happened to me. 3 years ago, my then wife filed for divorce. I was in the middle of pastoring at City Point Church, one of the staff pastors. And without going into the detail, let me just say she no longer wanted to be married after 10 years of marriage. Broke me. I went into a 3-week tailspin of the most guttural emotional moments of my life. No sleep. Still leading kids ministry at the time. I remember very vividly one Sunday morning speaking to the kids about hope. And nobody knew what was going on except for the lead pastor and a few board members and a couple good friends. And I wished the words I was saying to the kids were true for me, because I didn't feel any hope. You see, what I had done is, over the 10 years of my marriage, it didn't start that way, but it had begun slowly, insidiously, to begin to be this kind of dynamic where I was looking to my wife for the affirmation that I should only get from God. I was looking to her for approval. So when I would speak on a Sunday morning, I would ask her, how did I do? I would seek her out when I would do jobs around the house and just, you know, honey-do lists and things. I would wait for that affirmation. And almost, well, not almost, very unhealthily so, I would seek my value from my wife. My value was supposed to be placed one and only in Jesus Christ. And yes, it's great to have a wife that's supportive, but that should not be number one. And so I began to allow this journey of being, and it follows very closely with being insecure as a pastor. I was massively insecure as a husband, and I would require so much support from my then wife that it ended in a shipwreck. Now, there's so many other aspects to it, and I'm not going to go into that. But what I do know is, from my own life, I know God allowed that. He never caused it. He does not cause divorce. So if you're divorced in this room, or if you've gone through that pain, or you know that pain, or you have family members that know that pain, God does not cause divorce. But one thing he did in my life is he allowed it. And I remember very vividly, about 2 months after I realized there was no hope for my marriage, I had tried to reconcile. There was no hope. Rick, you and I sat in your car. Remember that conversation well. I remember when there was no hope for my marriage, I finally resigned to that knowledge. I had a conversation with God in the middle of LaVenture, Mount Vernon, at a stoplight. And I remember very clearly an absolute peace coming into the vehicle. And the conversation went finally like this: God, if it's just me and you, I know I'm okay. If it's just me and you and I lose everything else, I know I'm okay. No sooner had that peace entered than it vanished because of what I heard from God next. Now, I'm not the kind of guy that says, yeah, I hear from the Lord all the time. In fact, I've never heard his audible voice, but what I heard next was incredibly clear, because it did not come from me, because I would have never thought of it. What I heard next, after I said, God, if it's just you and me, I'm okay, is, what about your kids? It's like a sucker punch. because I knew what I was going to go through. I was facing a massive custody battle. My children were about to be moved to Portland, Oregon. And I was fighting for my relationship with my kids. So not only had I placed my identity as a pastor, I placed my identity in being a husband. That was removed from me. I had, above all of those, if you were to say, what was the one that you placed your identity in the most, Matt, I would say as a dad. I love my three kids. I remember very clearly knowing that there was a danger. They were going to be moved to a different state. And I was going to go from seeing them every day after work to seeing them maybe once every other weekend, and most of that time in a car ride. And when God said, what about your kids? I know what he was doing. He's asking the question, Matt, if it's really just you and me, will you still be okay? Or are you just giving me lip service? Will you still be okay? Matt, am I number one in your life? Or are you just playing it this time? Am I really number one? God is a jealous God. He doesn't do it because he is sadistic and wants us to go through pain in our lives. He does it because he desperately loves us. He knows that we're headed for a shipwreck. So for the next 9 months, I battled with God. Day after day, arguing, pounding my fist on the van as I would drive to work every day. And I had some very, very difficult conversations. I would say yell fests. It's okay to yell at God. Did you know that? Let me just say that right now as a former pastor. It's okay to yell at God. Some of you are like, yeah, let me tell you. He's a big boy. He can handle it. He can handle our anger. In fact, I think it's more dangerous when we avoid God and we run the other direction than when we bring our legitimate anger to him and say, why? It's an okay question to ask. We may not get the answer. Most often we won't, because the answer will include no faith. And when you ask why and you don't get an answer, he's telling you, you need to trust me, please. Just trust me. So for 9 months, I fought trusting him. And after that season, still in the midst of the custody battle, being very, very heated, not knowing whether or not they would be in Oregon, I remember relenting and saying, God, yes, even if my children are taken from me, I'm still going to be okay. One of the hardest journeys of my life. But the statement that when it comes to relationships, God must be first, that statement is very real to me. He's begun to remove, and he's had to remove very carefully the tentacles that I've wrapped around certain things and people. And he's begun to remove and then reorganize them. Some of you know very clearly what I'm talking about. You've gone down that path. You've gone down that journey. Some of you, you're in the middle of it right now. And you're wondering, have I placed that job or that position or that profession or that calling or that relationship above my king? And I just want to carefully and lovingly tell you, you might be headed for a shipwreck. But on the other side of that, there's hope. There's tremendous hope. The pain is real, but guess what else is very real? In the midst of all of that journey, I had the most peace I've ever had in my life. In the midst of living in my parents' mother-in-law apartment as a 36-year-old man, I had joy. In the midst of seeing my kids and having my time cut down to, it started a quarter of the time. I was able to see them every other weekend to start. Now I get them Thursday through Sunday, 2 out of every 3 weekends. In the midst of that, I still had joy and peace. And guess what? The time that I did have with them was incredibly sweet. Quality time went through the roof. The joy is very real. And one of the things that I want to leave with you, this might be a takeaway you might write down. One of the things that I've gathered from going through the shipwrecks in my life is Our culture is really quick to look for the light at the end of the tunnel. You know, I think that's so false. There's nowhere in the Bible that says, you get through this and there's going to be good things on the end. No. Instead of looking for the light at the end of the tunnel, look for the light that's walking with you right in the middle of the tunnel. His name's Jesus. And he will give you the most peace you'll ever have. He'll give you the most contentment you will ever have when he is number one in your life. You will go through no matter what life can throw at you, and you can run straight through it because of the strength that he will provide. Don't look for the light at the end of the tunnel. Watch Jesus and stay close to him and hold his hand as he walks you through it. Jesus will take you through the shipwrecks. And on the other end of that, prayerfully, hopefully, Jesus will be central in your life once again. That doesn't mean you're not going to have another shipwreck, but that is one of the major causes of it. When it comes to relationships, God must be number one. So as a pastor, I had some massive insecurity because I placed my identity in being a pastor rather than a son of God. As a husband, I placed my identity in being a husband, and I ended up broken and divorced, not entirely because of that, but partly because of that. As a father, I went from seeing them every day to once every other weekend. And God had to lovingly remove my identity as a father and realize one very key truth. They were never mine to begin with. They're his kids. He's lending them to me for a period of time on this earth. And when I was able to relinquish my children to the Lord and pray over them as a father and a priest would, then I was able to have peace once again. God must be number one when it comes to your relationships. If he isn't, life doesn't work. So let's get back to the original question. Why is God so jealous? Why is he so passionate? Why does he get involved in our stuff and reorganize our life? Why did he take that car away from me at age 18? Because he desperately loves us, and he knows exactly how this life works. And he knows that if it is not organized, as he is central, he is number one in all of life, including our relationships, we're headed for a shipwreck. He loves us so much. He will even allow us to go through the shipwreck so that we can have peace in him once again and come back to our original love. Just yesterday, I had a hard conversation with my son. My son is 10 years old, loves his iPad, loves his TV time. And yesterday, he racked up the hours too quickly. He went 2 hours. It's basically my limit for screen time in a day. And it was a weekend, so I allowed him to do that. And he hopped on the iPad and then hopped on his favorite TV shows. And he got up to his two-hour limit, and I said, okay, we're done for the day. I was outside doing some work, and I wanted him to come do the project with me and teach him how to use tools and stuff. And he wandered out there for a little bit, but then he came back inside for lunch. And so I wandered in. I had to use the restroom, so I came in. I saw him watching TV while eating lunch with his little sister. So I calmly went over to the TV, turned it off, turned the DVR off, and then I said, well, okay, well, you lost your privilege for the rest of the day. We were going to have a movie night, but I don't know if you're going to be able to do that. So he just kind of, deer in the headlights stare. It's like, what just happened? There's this pause before the tears. And then I just walked out and went back to work. And so a little while later, he wanders out, comes hang out with me, thinking that if he helps, he will get a reward. Yeah, parents, you ever had that one happen? No, never, never. Thinking he'll be rewarded if he helps me. So after like 30 minutes of helping, he says, Dad, so Grandma said that if I help you, you might reward me and I can watch some TV. First of all, Grandma never said that. Second of all, I had the eyes got big as saucers meaning of life conversation with my son at that point. Like, son, let me just help you out here. I want to help you and to teach you how to grow up. TV's not going to help you do that. And here's one of the opportunities I want to give you. I want to give you an opportunity to do this and work with me and come alongside me. And so he, in the midst of that, once he found out immediately he wasn't getting a reward, he walked straight away from me while I was talking to him. Oh, yeah. Come on, dads. Yeah, and moms. He was about ready to shut the door. I said, Zan, do not do that. And he almost shut the door, and then I finally yelled. I said, Alexander, now! Comes outside, his head's kind of down. I'm like, and then I just got right up to his face, and I said, Alexander, I love allowing you to watch TV. I love allowing you to have fun on the iPad. I like doing it with you. I like playing the games on the iPad and watching TV with you. It's a gift I like to give to you. And this is literally what I said. And by the way, this is not because of an illustration for this morning. It's like, Ty, you know what I'm talking about. Pastor moment here. No. This is none of that. I just looked at him and I looked him in the eye and said, Alexander, I have so precious little time with you. My relationship with you is primary. If something takes my place, I'm going to remove it. I have to, because I love you that much. And I could see tears were starting to form on his face. I said, I've got to let you know how much our relationship means. I don't want things to come between us. That's what God does with us. I'm convinced that's what he does with us. That's why he's so jealous. He doesn't want anything, any person, any possession, any profession, any calling, you name it. He doesn't want it to take his place. They're all great things. They're all good things. But you know what? Sometimes the greatest enemy of the perfect is the good. The greatest enemy of a perfect relationship with Jesus Christ is all the good stuff of life that just completely supplants him. And then we spiral out of control and we wonder, why, God? Why is this happening to me? One of the reasons is he's not first. And if God is going to be our God, he has to be number one in our relationships. So, as God began to return back to my rightful place over the last 5 years, his rightful place in my life, you know, one of the things that's so amazing about God, he began to restore certain things back into my life. You know that car that I told you about at age 18 that I lost in the car accident? Well, it was totaled, obviously. The insurance company went to appraise it and check it out and see how much they would give me. Guess how much they gave me? Exactly how much I paid for it. I don't know about you, but that doesn't happen very often. To the dollar, I'm not making this up, to the dollar, they paid me exactly how much I bought it a week and a half later, earlier. So I took that money and I went a week and a half later to the same car salesman. I said, guess what? I'm here to buy another car. He's like, didn't I see you? Like, yeah, that was me. Yeah, that was me. I bought that car, another one, and this time this car was not the idol. This was not. I took care of it like you do with your possessions. But it didn't trump Jesus anymore. And one of the things that I love about our God is he will restore, after he removes them from us, he'll restore with those relationships, those possessions sometimes, those professions or positions, in his season, in his timing, after we've reorganized our life the way it needs to be. And so, I'm no longer battling the insecurity that I once battled. I'm not saying that's done, but you know how freeing it is when you can look at someone in the eye at a coffee shop and really care about what they're saying? Like really enter into their world because you don't care about what they think of you? Man, it's so freeing. God's allowed me to really pastor people and shepherd people, especially people who are going through pain. Another thing that God's allowed me to do is the times that I have with my children, which is about 40% of the time, they're incredibly sweet. And I love every second I have with them. And we have a lot of fun. And the other very, very major thing that God has allowed me to experience is in 6 days I get to marry a beautiful woman of God who loves Jesus with all her heart. Thank you. And now I'll put her on the spot and make her stand up in front of all of you. I'm joking. Bad way to start your marriage, Matt. Bad way to start your marriage. You know, when it comes to relationships, God must be number one. And you know what? I think for those of you who are single in the room, let me just say this. If you're looking for the one, run as hard as you can after God. If you see someone running alongside you, take a second look. One of the best pieces of advice I've ever been given with regards to relationships. What does that speak to? It speaks to the number one. Jesus is your number one. And so this conversation about finding the one, no. You're finding the two. So I'm excited to pursue the number one with my number two for the rest of my life. And that will be the priority I keep as a model to my children and to those around me. I rediscovered the one in my life after losing it all. You know, it's an unfortunate truth that I think we realize after shipwrecks. We discover that God is all we need, often when he's all we have. And that's so true. Because really, if we're really honest, if we really peel back the layers, if you've visited or had a, you know, been to a funeral or memorial recently, man, it gets real at memorials and funerals, doesn't it? God is really all we have in this life. And if we really, truly believe that, we're going to have so much peace through the storms of life. I don't know where you're at today. You may be in the middle of a broken relationship, a shipwreck relationship. You may be trying to put the pieces back together. I don't know your story. I've shared with you this journey that I've been on and some of my story to tell you that God heals broken things. God heals shipwrecks. He puts lives back together. The great song that we sang, he does heal the broken. We just sang it this morning. As long as he is number one in your life, there's hope. There's hope. Why don't you bow your head?
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Inspire Church. For more audio and video content, check out icskagitvalley.org.